These are sounds Brenda knew as a child. She spent a great deal of time playing outside. And interestingly, not just playing games, but playing the piano out of doors. More on that shortly. So music melding with the sound of nature and the sounds of nature would be oh so natural for her. And that was then. These birds and bugs and even the babbling of a brook are not just the literal ground base of her days these days, but a morning blessing for anyone who invites Brenda Fernandez and her big heart into their lives. Brenda Fernandez is a singer and a musician, a composer and visual artist from Scranton, who has just released a new CD titled Her Mountains. Appropriately, the cover art features a photograph of Brenda belonging, naturally, to the scene of which she's a part, mountains behind her, branches as if embracing her, an image of beauty and peace. And she's come to that figurative place in her music and to the power of sound in our lives, and she's inviting us to celebrate with her this Friday at the Artists for Art Gallery in downtown Scranton for a CD release party for Her Mountains and an intimate performance in the gallery. Brenda Fernandez paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about her musical journey and how it began.
When I was about 12, my father bought this crappy old piano, and it was outside. It was on the side of the house. We couldn't fit it in the house. So I would rush home from school, take my book bag off, and just play. I would just play it. I didn't know what I was doing, but I loved. And there was only one octave on the piano that worked. But I just loved the sound. I loved the feeling, the vibration. But then I was like really into art, you know, the visual arts and painting and drawing and all of that. And then it wasn't until I was 21 that I started to put poetry to piano. And I just started teaching myself the piano just by ear, just by listening. It was like a blank canvas musically. And I played my first song for my mom, and she cried. And I thought, geez, my artwork doesn't have an emotional response like this. This is such a heart connection. And it was a way for me to express myself in a way that seemed more human or more deep. So that's kind of where it all began.
What about the words? Did you read a lot as a little one?
No, I didn't read much either. But poetry, somehow just when I was 19, I started writing poetry, and I just loved words. Because I also listened to a lot of music at that time where singers and songwriters were writing these really powerful songs, and I thought, geez, I wish I could do something like that. And then years later, after I started learning the piano or listening to the piano, then I thought I really have to learn music theory. And it wasn't until I was about 24, I think, that I studied with Marco Marcinko, and he taught me a great deal in a year about jazz theory and very complex things that I didn't understand, but I guess the mathematical part of me was like, wow, I love this. One of my favorite things was I loved how a minor, it's called a seventh chord in jazz, where a major and a minor live in that same field of one another. And that's when, like, if you listen to jazz, it's got this like great middle way or something. It's very expressive, and it's open to any other sound to bring it forth or to kind of create dissonance or have it come together. And it was a great thing that I did for myself, learning music theory, because then I got to communicate with other musicians through key signatures and treble clefs and notes. But I don't read music now. I still only play by ear because I hate reading music. I just cry at the piano, so I don't want to do that.
Do you remember that first song? Do you have it still? Do you still sing it?
I don't still sing it because it feels like centuries ago. But yeah, it was my first heartbreak song, of course. Everyone's got one. But of course, the words were so vague and mysterious and no one really knew what the heck I was saying because I was like, you know, younger and I wanted to sound very intelligent. But when you're young, you're kind of all over the place.
When you then had the year with Marco and that coming together with music theory, what did that open up? What did that allow you to do then in terms of your own songwriting?
Oh, just expand and not stay with the same format and to take more risks, definitely. I still felt a little bit of self-doubt or low self-esteem because I didn't learn young, like very young. And I thought, geez, if only I had piano lessons, I could have been Chopin or I could have been Herbie Hancock or something. But I'm me, and it definitely expanded my horizons. And I started listening to a lot more different kinds of music that I could understand better on many levels.
Do you play in public?
I do. Sometimes I play outside on the street. You know, I'll just set up shop, and people are glad to hear it in Scranton because it's very rare. I was hoping it would catch on, so other musicians started playing out in the streets in the summertime because I was inspired when I went to Asheville, North Carolina, and that's on every corner there was music, and it was lovely. So I kind of wanted to get that rolling. It didn't go that way, it doesn't matter, but right now I play maybe in yoga studios or places that are more relaxed. Or galleries or whatever. I don't play in bars anymore or cafes or restaurants. The music that I'm writing now is definitely more for the relationship between the audience and the musician. It's not background music. And after a while, as any musician knows, when you play out in bars and things and you're just background music, it's very tiring and wearing, especially if you're writing that music yourself and it's a real part of you. You want to be heard, you want to share your gifts and your inspiration. And recently, since the winter, I've been playing at Geisinger for a program called Art Heals. They hired a few musicians to play there in the evening on the ICU unit. And so far so good. We'll play for like a 3-hour clip from like 4 to 7 or whatever, and family members, even the staff, you could kind of hear the music lofty through the hallways, and it's very healing. And the musicians that are playing seem to be very sensitive to everyone's emotional levels, whether you're in despair or you are relieved that your aunt or your grandfather is, you know, gonna make it. And I've developed some interesting connections with people through it too, because it seems like they're more vulnerable, and it's brilliant. And it's almost like the music could get there quicker versus the fast-paced world, and you gotta go to the thing, and you're just sitting there waiting in the waiting room, you know, waiting, and it's terrible. So you hear a violin, or you hear a handpan, or you hear a harmonium. And it's very relaxing and grounding.
Is there something one of the listeners has said that has stayed with you?
There's countless stories of really interesting connections with other humans. And this one in particular hit me the most because it was so raw and so odd. At first, she came up to me and she said, "Why are you playing such sad music?" And I really looked at that and I said, "Wow, that's so fascinating. What's your name?" And we started talking, and I said, "You know, when we are in a state of mind of, let's say, sadness, it paints the whole picture externally of sadness, correct? I mean, that's just the way it goes. If you're sad, you're not gonna, if someone's happy and comes and taps you on the shoulder and has balloons for you, you're going to want to pop every little balloon because you're not in that state of mind." So then we started to talk about that, and I said, "Well, where are you at emotionally, and what's going on with you?" And she started talking about her grandmother, and she just opened completely up. And she goes, "Well, I'm going to go outside for a smoke or whatever, I don't know." And I said, "Well, when you come back, come and sit by me, and I want to sing you a song." And she came back and she sat there and she listened, and it was really cool. It was, I didn't think she was gonna, you know, I didn't, you never know with people. But meeting others that are different than you, or trying to be sensitive to other people's needs, but having your own integrity of saying, wow, that's interesting that you feel that way. Because my music is uplifting, it's inspiring, the lyrics are prayers, basically. You know, they're hymns and praises, and it's just uplift. For me, it's uplifting. So that's why I was like, that's interesting. But it was a lovely connection.
What relationship does what you've just described have to what you're bringing us on your new release?
It's songs that you've never heard. They're songs that are approachable, but people, it seems like since I'm singing more from my heart center, it's connecting me more with other people, you know. And in my past, I wrote music that was all about my own personal process, my own psychological woes and struggles, and my me. It was so all about me and how I saw the world. And then I spoke to this woman, this famous singer, and I said, how do you do what you do? She had this light in her that was so attractive, and her songs and her performances. And she said, well, I use my music as meditation. And I think I spoke to you about that before. And that's what led me to not being so self-absorbed, and then going into another dimension of we-ness and our path together as a family of brothers and sisters, and not so separate of me and this is my thing, and if you don't like it, then whatever. But now that it's more encompassing, I feel like it's more true.
And you're seeing a deeper response on the part of people?
Yes, yes, definitely. And selling more music, which I never, you know, I would be like, you want my CD, you want my... You know, this was back in the day, like in my trunk, I would be like, buy my CD, you know. And now people are like, I'd love to have your music. I'd love to listen to it in the car during rush hour and to chill out, you know. So that's nice too. But I think as an artist, as you get older, you start to develop yourself more, you start to become more mature, and you start to see clearly what your niche is, because you know, you don't care what other people think anymore. And then once you don't care what other people, you just do it. And it's bold to do that, but something in you, your soul, is like, you're doing this. Even if you are rejected by society, you're gonna do it.
Have you done then what the singer you spoke with suggested, and that is use your music as a meditation? Do you do yoga? Have a practice?
I used to have a practice, a very deep practice, and not so much anymore now. I kind of grew out of it. I'm more into hiking and biking, and now I just maybe once a week I'll find myself stretching or doing a sun salutation or doing a little kundalini yoga to raise up my sugar-dooga-wooga or whatever, you know what I mean? But it's not so much of a focus now in my life.
Pick a song and talk to us a little bit about it.
Okay, well, let's see. I love them all. I guess I'll pick one that I'm going to be singing for my CD party, and it's called Om Tare. And there's a mantra in it. Om Tare Tutare Ture Soham. It's like a reflection of compassion, awakening our compassionate selves, the higher self internally. So what I've been doing is crossbreeding mantra and English words. So as an example, I'll read a little bit of the lyrics. Look and let go, keep it simple. Give up your eyes and see with hollowed vision. Drop your small bowl of water and walk into the ocean. No need to fix your tired wings. Go and fly with the mighty eagle. Forget everything you think you know. Feel the essence of your divine soul. So like in a nutshell, I guess, for me, it's a reflection of surrender, definite surrender. But I think each song has its own playfulness with a deeper concept, whether it has to do with forgiveness, or it has to do with peace, or grievances, or stillness, or really, really developing a skill to become a spiritual warrior, so to speak. And with sound, it's like a perfect union, because I really do feel that music and sound is a healer. So you add words that are deep and sweet and inspiring, and it feels like these words are coming from a place in me that I have no... I don't feel like I'm writing them. Something else is writing it, and I just move aside. You know, I could sit in the quiet for a little while, and then it will come. But I'm not trying to do anything anymore. I'm not trying to write a great song. I'm not trying to be a great person. I'm not trying anything. I'm just allowing. And that's what's coming out from just allowing through language and sound. And what I love about mantra is when you sing mantra, well, I'm a Westerner, so I don't have any background on growing up in a temple or growing up in an ashram or anything, but these sounds resonate and they have a specific reasoning. Like at the top of your roof, you have all these like little pads, and when your tongue or the vibration comes through, it sets the tone actually and brings the two hemispheres of your brain together. Just because of sound. Think about sound as a word. If you say a mean word to someone, like you're a jerk, that creates a sound, and it's almost like an unhealing sound. It's separate, and it's damning, and it's violent so much. But if you say I love you, if you even say I love you, you could feel practically all the cells in your body go, you know, they open up, everything gets larger, everything gets bigger and more spacious. And so I think with all these mantras that these sages and yogis and saints have been chanting for all this time, there's something to it. And I know there's something to it for me personally, but it definitely gets you there into the heart center. Say you're at a concert and like there's this great rhythm going, and everybody gets in tune with each other, really. Like, what's that thing, that experiment? It's called entrainment. And the clocks, he took all these grandfather clocks, and they were all going at the wrong speeds and everything. But eventually, they all started entraining with one another, and their pendulums were swinging all at the same time. And that's what happens with us at a concert. It's what happens when we sing. It happens when we dance and play music. And I think it creates health in our thinking and in our body. And I think of this too, when you're a little baby and your parent or someone sings to you, or you yourself as a baby go, ah, it's like you're singing, and it's comforting. A lullaby is comforting. Sound, I think we live in a time right now where sound could actually be very violent and could actually create illness. So I'm not a sound professor of sound, or I don't have any degrees in the isms of that and the ologies of that, but I sing and play pretty much every day. And I feel like it's opened my life in ways that are miraculous.
Now tell us about your instrument.
My instrument, well, my main instrument now, besides the piano, is the harmonium. But what I do is I also create my own beats. I have two drum machines, and I also have an app on my phone called the Tampura. And it's like, I use that sometimes in some of the songs because it has a sitar quality to it that has a drone of maybe one, it's like a key that just kind of, so say it's in C major, it could just spread out through the whole song, and it's very meditative and relaxing. So beats and the harmonium and my voice, and I do all the harmonies, of course. it's very simple right now. I'm hoping that someday I will have a band. I'm hoping that I will attract the right people at the right time, that they'll say, I want to be a part of this.
What does the harmonium mean to you? It has quite a rich history as an instrument.
Well, when I first started playing it, I didn't know what I was doing. I was borrowing a friend's, and we were part of this chanting group in Scranton that never really came to fruition because no one really wants to chant. So then, about 2 years ago, a friend of mine bought me a harmonium for a Christmas gift, and I didn't touch it. Maybe it was 3 years ago, I don't know, but I didn't touch it. I was kind of afraid of it because it was real and it was mine. And so then I wrote my first song on it called Grievances. And what it means to me is I'm sitting on the floor with this little instrument, and it's got bellows, it's got the reeds, it sounds like an accordion. So that immediately brings me back to my uncle who used to play the accordion when I was little. And I thought it was like the coolest sound. It was so odd and fanciful. But the harmonium is a crossbreed of an organ sound, because it was very churchy and very, you know. But then the Indians took over the harmonium in their kirtan bands and their praises, and so then it became this really cool instrument that you could just, it's portable, you know, it doesn't need to plug in. I love that. But I love sitting with it, and I named her Ruby, my instrument, and I feel like I have a relationship with her. And when I play it, it's much different than the piano. I feel like I go somewhere else. I feel like I kind of go into this, in my mind, I'm in a cave and there's fire and it's quiet and it's like something deep and earthy. It's got a real earthy sound to it. And it almost could sound a little annoying. Like, you know how bagpipes are like a cry almost, kind of off, but it's this powerful, vulnerable sound. But then the cool thing about a harmonium is if you make a chord on it, and it's got these little knobs where you could actually make it sound really full, and it sounds so harmonious. So it actually sounds like you're in this big orchestra, and you're not even doing much. So I could concentrate on singing and the other things that I need to be concentrating on.
And with the bellows, there's a sense of breathing, isn't
there? Breathing, yeah. So the instrument actually feels to me like it's another being. Yeah, definitely.
And you have a picture of it, do you, on the album?
Yes, I do. Yeah, there's Ruby. She had to be in the picture. I mean, it's her debut.
Now tell us where we can find you and about this party that you're going to have.
So I'm having a CD release party on May 12th at the AFA Gallery in Scranton. It's at 514 Lackawanna Avenue. It's free admission. There's going to be delightful spirits and food provided. It's from 6 o'clock to 8:30, and it's my first official album. My first official. I went to a real sound engineer. I went to a wonderful recording studio in Mount Cobb, Windmill Agency, and a man by the name of Eric Ritter helped me along, and he was very instinctual with sound, and just, it was a great thing. And I'll be on iTunes, I'll be on CD Baby, another distributor, and I have my own website now. So I just feel like I'm really digging my heels in this go around, because I really believe in what I'm creating.
Brenda Fernandez, a singer, a musician, a composer, and a visual artist from Scranton, who has just released a new CD titled Her Mountains, and this is the title track. Brenda Fernandez is hosting a CD release party for Her Mountains this Friday, May 12th, from 6 to 8:30 p.m. at the AFA Gallery, 514 Lackawanna Avenue in Scranton. Admission is free. There will be refreshments and a small concert, as she describes it, at 7. For more information, you may check the AFA Gallery website.
I dropped my illusions of pain.
Brenda Fernandez having a CD release party on Friday, May 12th, this Friday, from 6 to 8:30 p.m. with a small concert at 7 at the AFA Gallery, the Artists for Art Gallery, 514 Lackawanna Avenue in Scranton. Admission is free.
To a place.